Hi, I'm your host, Ryan Recker. For the next hour, we're going to look at KAI Design and Build, a minority-owned family business with Mike Kennedy Sr. and Mike Kennedy Jr. joining us in studio to talk about not only the history, but where KAI Design will be heading. We'll also be joined with Dan Bean from CMA Consulting, who presents this program, The Business of Family Business. You can find out more about what they do online at cmaconsult.com. So, Mike Sr., I want to start with you. Can you back up and tell me where everything starts with the business?
It started in 1980, mm-hmm. Officially. I was reasonably employed at the time. And, of course, I had, like everyone else, I think I had a vision of what would it be like to have my own business. Mm-hmm. But I wasn't intending to start one. I got involved in a real estate development of two old World's Fair gray stones in the Central West End mm-hmm. in 1979. And by 80, I couldn't get it all done unless I quit my job. So I quit my job. And if mm-hmm. you remember 1980, the prime rate was 22%. So I'm out of a job and can't get financed and wouldn't want to do it if I could mm-hmm. at that rate. So we were sitting on our hands and my wife suggested, you should go look for some architecture to do. It might be a good idea. And that became what we did. It wasn't intentional.
Mm-hmm. What were you doing before you started the business?
Architecture. I was working for several firms. Mm-hmm. For years out of Washington University School of Architecture.
Yeah. Where did you go to school?
Washington University.
Oh, you did?
School of Architecture.
Yeah, gotcha. So when you're going to school and you're working for some firms in the area, what were your dreams, your ambitions at the time?
At the time, I was currently working in a location where my limited vision was maybe I should hope to be a partner in this firm. Mm-hmm. Prior, that firm happened to be a minority-owned firm, mm-hmm. and I guess we had 25-30 employees mm-hmm. on staff, and he was the largest minority-owned architect in St. Louis in the late 70s. Mm-hmm. I had worked previously in majority-owned firms and really couldn't quite see me becoming a partner. Mm-hmm. That turns out not to be the reality. It was just my insecurity.
Hmm.
I could have been, mm-hmm. but I was influenced by other people's perceptions and not my own ability to perform and impress. So,
let's say your perception was different at the time. Do you think you would have stayed the path, tried to become a partner in a firm, or would you still have had the ambition to go and start your own business?
Well, I don't believe in that sort of thing.
Yeah?
Well, no, the what-ifs don't count. You know, the Lord led me in a direction, mm-hmm. and this is where I wound up. Mm-hmm. Am I sorry for it? No. Mm-hmm. Everything that happened outside of things that I planned and controlled, mm-hmm. and as I look back on it, I'm glad for it.
Yeah. 1980, did you have any children at that time?
Yes.
Yes.
I can remember the year well because I quit my job in March. April came along and my furnace went out. And I said, oh, good, it's April and I don't have the money to get it fixed.
Right.
So I'll be fine. But it snowed that April and me and my son here and my wife and our new barn all stayed in one room for 22 days with a space heater. Yeah.
Wow. There's a lot of pressure there.
It was excruciating. Excruciating.
Yeah. How supportive was your wife through this whole process?
100%.
Yeah.
100%. As a matter of fact, she said to me, if you don't do this, you'll always ask yourself if you should have. Mm-hmm. Maybe you should have. You don't want to have that. Go do it. And yeah. We only had $2,000 to our name. Mm-hmm. We had choices.
Yeah.
Pay off some of our debt or roll the dice.
How did you get started then?
I started in the basement of my house.
Yeah.
Okay. And that was the problem. We owed money to our parents on the down payment for our house. We were anxious to pay it. I'd been working overtime to come up with something to give them back. But here we were now in the basement of the house. And I can remember I had a spreadsheet for how I was going to live. I did spreadsheets for how to develop the real estate. Mm-hmm. And, you know, today they're called Excel.
Yeah.
Back then, had no name for it, but it's the same format, little cells filled with numbers and a hand calculator. Mm-hmm. We went on at that time in that spreadsheet forecasting how long we could survive on the little bit of income that we had between the two of us. Mm-hmm. And it came out that on the spreadsheet that we would be fine until September the 1st. But in August, we were going to run out of money. Mm-hmm. And I called it the cliff. Mm-hmm. I said, well, from March, August, we're going to be coming to the cliff. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to go over the end of the cliff and
So you had at least a vision. You knew you something had to happen in that time.
Yeah, well, it didn't. And my wife had said, go find some work and put together some business cards and a portfolio and drove up to Jefferson City, called on the State Division of Design and Construction. That would have been in April or May. Mm-hmm. Can't remember for sure now. Came back, sat around all summer waiting for something to happen in the financial marketplace, mm-hmm. working on things that I could. But it was August 27th when I decided to call up there and see if those people were doing anything, because the cliff was just a few days away.
Yeah.
And when I placed that call, the guy that answered the phone said, amazing that you called. I have a contract on my desk with your name on it.
Hmm. How about that?
We did business for the state of Missouri from that day for the next 20 years.
Wow.
Well, that's because you're still doing it. I mean, yeah, I'm not.
Yeah. You mentioned just some faith. You see something like that as an act of God, setting that up just at the
right
time.
Well, I don't know. Maybe you've got a better excuse, but I can't come up with one.
Yeah, no kidding. Mm-hmm. So
that's right to the edge of the cliff, isn't it?
Yeah, that is. Mm-hmm. One thing you mentioned before with the spreadsheets. So did you have a personal computer, or did you say you were doing some of these things by hand?
Oh, gosh. I still have the calculator. It was a Casio.
Yeah.
Remember those little Casios? No, this one was about the size of my hand.
Okay. And you were doing all the calculations.
It
could do spreadsheets on the Casio.
I had a, you know,
he
as an architect.
He was writing in pencil on a piece of paper. That's what he was saying.
Oh,
He made a grid lines and wrote it out and made what is now Excel.
Yeah.
I made an Excel sheet like you'd make a blueprint.
We'll continue our conversation with Mike Kennedy Sr. and Jr. from KAI Design and Build. Welcome back to The Business of Family Business. I'm your host, Ryan Recker. It's presented by CMA Consulting, joined in studio with Mike Kennedy Sr. and also Mike Kennedy Jr. from KAI Design. We share the stories of family businesses across the St. Louis region. If you know a great family business story we'd like to hear from them, just reach out to cmaconsult.com. So what happened after that contract came in, that very first one? What was the first thing you did?
I did it myself.
Yeah?
Yeah. And I remember it was at Malcolm Bliss Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
Where was Malcolm Bliss? It was on down south, South St. Louis. Can't remember the Chippewa.
Okay.
Chippewa. So. And you know what was interesting when I finished it? Fortunately, I had done a good job, mm-hmm. good enough for them to say, we got another one for mm-hmm. you. And it was twice as much money. By then, I had the financing on the development project going. Mm-hmm. I paid myself for my year's worth of work with no pay. Mm-hmm. We haven't missed a payroll since.
Was that difficult for you, knowing that everything has to go right in order for your company to succeed? It was almost like a make or break with just that one client, and you're working everything and you're not getting paid. You're doing this all knowing that the payoff would be at the end. That must have been a lot of stress.
Well, that was, but that was 1980. And in 1986, we did another project or two in those few years. But then after that, the tax law changed to 221D4 that we were doing them under.
Mm-hmm.
Those tax credits went away for a while, and I stepped out of the development business,
mm-hmm.
and I was doing work as the joint venture partners with a company called Pantheon Corporation in those days, and they were developing everything in the Central West End. Mm-hmm. Around the DeBolivar area.
Mm-hmm.
Remember the DeBolivar area? And Leon Strauss, the guy who redid the Fox Theater, and was my partner in some of those projects. They sold their company after those days, and Leon went off to do the Fox. I got out, and we focused on architecture.
Mm-hmm.
About that time, we started doing the light rail system for Metrolink.
Hmm.
And our role on that project over the next 5 or 6 years, was the primary architect for all the station design.
Wow. Yeah, that's quite a job.
Well, thank you, because we're proud of that job.
Yeah.
That job got us an award from the National Endowment for the Arts mm-hmm. for the design of the stations.
Mm-hmm.
And we took that to Dallas, Texas, and wound up on a joint venture partnership for a $1.3 billion project in Dallas.
How many stations did you design in St. Louis?
19. There was from the airport to, we were prime contractor for the airport line all the way to Scott Air Force Base.
Wow. Mike Sr. and Mike Jr. in here as well. What are some of your early memories with your dad that taking on these projects and design? You must remember some things when you were younger.
When I was younger, I remember playing in the basement when he was drawing by pencil on that table and banging into his leg and him telling my mom to come get me. Get me out of there because I'm distracting him. He's trying to focus.
Mm-hmm.
And then from that point, just growing up, seeing my dad work hard. He left early. He came home, and then we'd see him in the newspaper or see him on the magazine cover, and just knew that things were really going the right way, and our lives started to change.
Mike Sr., when did you start to see Mike Jr. show some interest and maybe you want to know more about what you were doing?
You have to understand that although he makes it sound like we never saw each other, I took him to nursery school every day, and we'd have a nice ride to school together. He was a December baby, mm-hmm. and as such, he was a year behind, because in this state, you don't go to school when you're five mm-hmm. if you're born after August.
Right.
So he was a little older than his class mm-hmm. in nursery school. I was late getting him there just a little bit one day, and all of the kids were in their classrooms, and we were going down the corridor with classrooms on either side, just the two of us, and all the doors were open. And as we walked down the hall, the kids saw him, and they started hollering, "Mikey! Mikey's here!" And I was in amazement, and they were all going, "Hey, Mikey!" as we passed each door. And you know what? I looked down at him, and he had his elbow bent and his hand in the air, and he was twisting his wrist and waving at all of them as he went by like the Queen of England. And I said, "Boy, this kid's the mayor here."
Yeah.
And he's a natural leader is what I'm trying to tell you.
Yeah.
And I didn't understand then, but I could see mm-hmm. that natural leadership thing coming out now. Now he's the leader of, what, 300-400 people?
400, yeah.
Wow, 400. So let's talk about that. And let me mention this to Dan Bean from CMA Consulting. You heard the start working in the basement. You have always, at the very start of a business, it seems like the moments where the furnace goes out, it always happens right at that moment. And there's all these other troubles that family business owners have to overcome. And somehow they find a way. Family business owners, from the very start, there's always a little bit of uncertainty there, isn't it?
Well, there's a lot of uncertainty. There's a lot of risk. And part of the reason entrepreneurs make it is they don't take no for an answer. And they stay at it until they figure out a way to make it work. They are extremely persistent. And once they start something, they take the attitude, "I have no option but to be successful."
Mm-hmm.
And I will stay at it until I am successful.
So where is KAI Design and Build going next? Mike Kennedy Sr., Mike Kennedy Jr. We'll continue our conversation with them. And they do have plans. And when you bring in a new generation, they also have their own ideas of where the company could go. That's coming up next, along with Dan Bean from CMA Consulting. I'm your host, Ryan Recker. This is the Business of Family Business on KMOX. Welcome back to the Business of Family Business. I'm your host, Ryan Recker, and I want to continue our conversation with KAI Design and Build with Mike Kennedy Sr., Mike Kennedy Jr. As you can tell, Mike Sr., very proud of his son, who continues to grow and lead the company in new directions to this day. Do you remember what age you might have wanted to, I guess, be more serious in your studies or maybe take a step towards the family business?
So towards the studies, I would say that when I was 13 years old,
yeah.
I've always had an interest in business and entrepreneurialism. And I even took my own money and ordered a subscription to Fortune magazine when I was 13. And my mom's like, "Why do you want that magazine?"
Yeah.
I was like, "I don't know. I want to learn more about this stuff." And she thought it was weird, but I liked reading them and sort of the way you get case studies and those types of things. And And my dad's never pushed us into the business. Mm-hmm. He exposed us. He let us come there to the office. He did all those things. But he always told my brothers and I, your mother and I want to support anything you guys want to do. It's important that you're happy, you know, and we want to support that to make sure you're happy. I had my own landscaping business in high school with one of my friends. I started off as a bagger at Deerberg's. Mm-hmm. And then I, you know, saved that money, and me and my friends started this little landscaping business. And I would talk to my dad about it and all of these different things. And he'd quiz us on stuff. And he's like, well, how do you do your invoicing? And how are you tracking your stuff? And then we did have an Excel spreadsheet at that point. I showed him on the computer. He was like, oh, that's impressive. And that we were actually, he's like, you guys are actually tracking your customers. And so that was fun and a great experience because, you know, you'd finish someone's lawn and your job was complete and you could look at it with a sense of satisfaction where today my job is never over. Yeah. It's continuous. But that was a great experience. Then I went into En-ROADS and had an internship with GE Capital. And I knew I was, okay, now I'm going to be this big executive that I was reading in Fortune magazine and had mentors and folks there to try to direct that. But in the back of my head, I was always thinking about, you know, what if I came to work with my dad? Mm-hmm. And so the interest kept building. And then one summer, right as I was graduating from college, I called my dad and said, hey, Dad, I think I can help you guys if you have a position open for me. So
I think I can help you guys. That's the right approach to it. That's a really great approach. Yeah.
You know what? He was right.
Yeah. Your son is running his own business in high school doing landscaping. You must be watching this from afar, and you have to be pretty proud of him for being able to do all of this.
Listen, I talk about it all the time. I always tell people about he and his friend and their business in high school because at the end of the summer, well, his friend's father worked for an automobile dealership, and he bought the equipment for them wholesale. Mm-hmm. And then at the end of the summer, they sold it for everything they had. They had spent on it, and they pocketed their. Oh, I thought, what a great plan! These guys are good. I was so proud. Yeah,
yeah. I think that's amazing. I really do. So let's talk about the growth of the company in the 90s and what you were doing throughout, because we heard about the years in the 80s and some of the clients you had there. What really were some of the projects you were working through the 90s?
Well, let's see. As I look out the window here, I would say down the street on Tucker Avenue is the St. Louis City Jail. Mm-hmm. I'm proud of that. Mm-hmm. We did a good job. I think it was a very attractive and appropriate building as prisons go.
Yeah.
For downtown St. Louis Business District, and people can drive by it and feel like it's not distracting. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to say prison looking.
Yeah. So what goes into designing something like that? What's your approach?
Well, our goal was all the things that I just mentioned. Mm-hmm. We don't want it to do, and we didn't want it to look like a prison. We wanted it to look like the office buildings that were being built at that time. Mm-hmm. It took a tremendous team of people to do that. That was
it was a $70 million.
Was it 70?
Yeah. Okay. Wow.
Yeah, $70 million. McCarthy Brothers built it. Mm-hmm. Jacobs was the
Structural and civil.
Structural civil. They were the construction managers.
Oh,
weren't they construction managers? Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, we were the prime.
Right.
And
all through the 90s, we did a lot of justice facility work. Mm-hmm. We did a lot of work for St. Louis Public Schools through their bond program, designing a lot of the middle and high schools around St. Louis Public Schools.
Oh, my God.
He
brings up memories when he says things like that. Joan Hubbard called me the other day. I couldn't believe it. She was with St. Louis Public Schools. Mm-hmm. We did Soldan. We did on Jefferson.
Gateway.
Samuel Shepard. Help me, Mike.
Sumner.
Sumner. Mm-hmm. We remodeled Sumner. Mm-hmm. That's the one I was trying to think of. Vashon. And
Clyde C. Miller.
Clyde C. Miller on Grand.
The majority of our portfolio through the 90s was justice, transit, schools.
So you were very familiar with the work that your dad and the company was doing even before you entered in.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Let me ask this to Dan Bean from CMA Consulting. I want to go back to one thing that Mike Jr. mentioned. When he got out of college, he said, I think I can help. And what a great approach to all of that. I wanted to talk to you about the relationship you see here, father and son, as a family business duo.
Well, first, let me comment on that. I think I can help. A lot of people come to a job looking for what can that company do for me and how much am I going to make? What can I do for you? How can I add value to your organization? That's a refreshing point of view, and that will impress employers. So anybody that hears this, and make sure they go in and say, here's how I can add value to your organization. That will make a difference in the interview. And that's what Mike Jr. did. The relationship you see here is one characterized by a lot of love and respect, and I'm going to say mutual admiration between these two. And there's also, as I've gotten to know them, there's a lot of open and respectful communication. They're very respectful of each other. They seem to really enjoy being together and really appreciate each other immensely.
Right. Mike Sr., is there anything that Mike Jr. brought to the table after he joined the family business that helped shape you in a different direction?
I didn't go to business school. I was bootstrapping it. Figuring it out as I go, asking anybody that I could find, how do you do this? What should I do? What shouldn't I do? I didn't really know. When he came along, he knew. He had been trained in it. I paid for it, after all. I should know. And then he came out of GE Capital, and I mean, he worked there for, what, 3-4 summers? And they wanted him. And when he called me up and said, I think I can help you, Dan, on the other side of that was, on the other hand, they've made me offers. You have to match them.
So he came with he had a number in mind when he talked to you. Okay.
Don't underestimate him.
So he's not human.
Yeah. He wanted to come, but he said, please match this, will you? And you know what? I thought about it. And I said, this is the best investment I could make. I had been waiting for this request, praying for it, and didn't see it coming. And he called me in May, just before he graduated. Another cliff. He said, I think I want to come to work for you. Oh, I was driving down Highway 64 going into Chesterfield Valley. I can remember it. I was on the downhill side of that highway. And he said, I want to come to work for you. By the time I got to the stoplight, I had made up my mind and said, okay, it didn't take much choice. I've been watching him all his life, and I knew what he could do.
At that point, were you thinking about a succession plan at all with the company?
I couldn't count on it because I was not going to influence his decision. I wanted him to come because it was his passion. All of my sons had that option.
How many sons do you have?
Three altogether.
Three, okay.
He's got two more. They're doing just fine. They live in Los Angeles.
We'll continue one last time with Mike Kennedy Sr. and Mike Kennedy Jr., both from KAI Design, one of the great companies here in St. Louis, Missouri, along with Dan Bean from CMA Consulting, who presents this program. It's the Business of Family Business. I'm your host, Ryan Recker, and you see how family businesses are like other businesses. They work hard. In this case, you hear how Mike Sr. and Mike Jr. work together. They inspire each other. They run ideas off of each other. There is a succession plan there. There is someone that's ready to pick up the torch and continue with the legacy of the business. And KAI Design and Build, you can tell, is in very good hands. What a great story we've heard today. KAI Design with Mike Kennedy Sr., also Mike Kennedy Jr. in studio with us, along with Dan Bean from CMA Consulting. If you missed part of this episode, you can always go back online to the podcast section at KMOX.com. And from there, listen from the start, hear this great story. Maybe you have a family business in mind that would like to tell their story on this program. It's easy. Just reach out to CMAConsult.com. Let them know you're interested in telling that story here on KMOX. So at that point, your son is thinking about getting in, and you make the offer and you start working together. At what point do you start thinking, well, maybe we can start looking even further? We can look down the road. We can look at maybe some leadership transitions or maybe some ownership transitions.
Okay, well, when he came on board, the one thing I did was put him immediately in the conference room with our leadership group. Call them management meetings or board meetings, and I wanted him to be able to sit, watch, listen, and learn, because we were making decisions And we would struggle with that. You probably know.
Yeah, he told me he had a chair against the wall and said, sit there and just listen. I wasn't at the table.
Mm.
So it was just Mondays at noon. I'd sit there. He said, bring your lunch and sit there and just listen to what we do ever since the first day on the job. So, and he said, if you have any questions, you can ask me, you know, in my office afterwards.
What did you learn from that?
Learned a lot.
Yeah.
I got to hear about issues going on in the office. I knew not to speak about them. Mm-hmm. I understood the concerns that people were having and what things I was seeing that I didn't know was an issue that I heard them talking about in the team about office chemistry and culture and finances. And when they were going over financial reviews, I learned by sitting there how to read the financials, what key indicators they were looking at and metrics, what was important to track and how the sales that I was doing was impacting what they were doing in that room.
What were you doing at that point, and what were some of the transitions you were making in your own professional career as you're starting to evolve in the business?
That was it's a lot of, you feel everything when your name's on a door. So coming out of school at 21 years old and working at GE before GE, I was like, okay, I just want to make an impression on these guys. It's mm-hmm. a corporation. I'm a number of, 30,000 employees or something. When I walked in that place, it didn't matter what my name on my card was or my title or my responsibilities. That name on the door made me look at everything. I cared about everything. It's not like, hey, it's not my job, was never in my vocabulary. Mm-hmm. So you look at everything. And I think one of the first things I did when I was there that surprised my dad is I was there for 3 months and I walked in his office with a 4-page memo on everything I thought that could be improved with the company.
Wow.
Or things that I observed or and I didn't know much about sales. I didn't have a network. He had a network that he was helping me learn how to do, but I was like, I want to make an impact right now. My dad's paying me real money and I'm doing nothing but learning. And I want to make sure that he gets a return on his investment right away. So what are some things I can do right now to show him that he's getting value?
Mm-hmm.
So I did that memo. We sat down and talked about it. He read it. He was sort of shocked because I'm shining lights on things he might not even be paying attention to. He came back in my office, threw it on the desk and said, okay, you fix it.
Okay.
So I was like, all right. I went in and one of the first things I did was renegotiate all our vendor contracts because nobody was watching it. Mm-hmm. I saw there was, he was growing as a firm. He had 120 employees at the time. And there was a lot of work going on. And remember, this was a boom going on in 2000. It was right before the bust in the 2001. But we were busy and we were the boat was stressed. And, mm-hmm. And we were like, there was things slipping through the cracks. So I was like, I'll be the cleanup man, And, back then people would set up, this is when cell phones, you got to remember in the 90s, cell phones were sort of new and people had corporate contracts and somebody set up the cell phones and didn't look at them for 3 or 4 years. And I'm like, well, you need to look at those rates and deals every 6 months. So mm-hmm. first thing I did was bring that vendor in and this vendor and that vendor. By the end of the year, I showed my dad a calculation of all the contracts I renegotiated and efficiencies were created. And I said, I paid for myself. I gave him the list and the total dollars, and it was more than what he paid me.
Wow. I got to bring this up to you, Mike Sr., because as he comes in and he lays out some of these issues, you were able to say, all right, go fix it. So you gave him the freedom to be able to learn that way and be able to mm-hmm. take some leadership that way, too.
I call it allowing him to reach too far and fail. And you have to be willing to do that if you really want somebody to learn and excel.
Mm-hmm.
And he did. He failed a few times. He said, let's go to Kansas City and open an office. Well, that didn't work.
But you kind of knew that there would be those moments. You mm-hmm. you factored that in as part of the learning experience because you knew that he'll get more right than he does wrong.
Yeah, well, you hope so anyway.
I still fail. It's just bigger zeros behind it.
I want to ask this about Dan Bean from CMA Consulting. There is value in failure, isn't there, though?
There absolutely is. In fact, research shows we learn more from our failures than we do from our successes.
Mm.
To this day, I can remember items I missed on a test in college. I don't know any item I got right. but I can tell you items I missed. Mm-hmm. And I bet the failures that Mike Jr. is talking about, we all have them. I bet he can remember his, and he's learned lifelong lessons from them, just like everybody else has.
Yeah. One of the things you mentioned, too, is the close relationship that you have with your father. Was it difficult at times to propose and then try and fail on some of these projects? Was it difficult for you, or did you look? Were you able to look at it as, you know, it was a business decision, and it didn't impact you as hard?
We both succeed. We succeed together, and when we both fail, we fail together. Mm-hmm. But we have a lot of faith that we're going to be all right.
Yeah.
And so he doesn't beat me up about it, and I don't beat him up about it. You know, all we could do is draw a line, and we look at each other and say, what's next? How mm-hmm. We can't look backwards. Let's take the lesson and not the loss, and let's look forward. So that's what we continue to do to this day. We've been through two recessions. We've been, I've been there. He's been through, four recessions, but I've been through two recessions with him. We've been through layoffs. We've been through massive fast growth. We've had been able to scream on top of the roof. We won, and then we walk away with our tail between our legs, like we shouldn't have played that one that way. So, but when we do it together. We just look at each other and say, "Well, see you tomorrow."
Yeah,
he's still a great inspiration to me. Now he's become my mentor.
Wow.
And I come to him and I go, "Mike, I need to bounce this off of you. What do you think?" Whereas before, that was him sitting in the corner, right? I'm giving him advice. So. It's just been a fabulous evolution. I can't think of anything that I could have done better.
When did you start talking to Mike Jr. about succession planning, and did it just happen organically and you were always working towards that point?
Oh, no, we were. Like I said, I was waiting and hoping because I understood best opportunity for me to have an exit plan was going to be somebody at least African-American. Mm-hmm. You have to understand that once I was in, getting out was going to be a problem. Mm-hmm. As long as I was being, my business was partially from minority participation. Mm-hmm. Now, let's say my business was 25% from minority participation opportunities, mm-hmm. and then I wanted to sell it. And if I wanted to sell it to you or Dan, being that you're not a minority, your first question would be, what part of your business is from that? Because I'm not going to be able to get it.
Mm-hmm. Can you explain how that works and what that means when you're a minority-owned enterprise and what that may allow you to do when it comes to bidding on projects?
Take it, Mike.
So when you're a minority business enterprise, the state, the city, the federal government, they all have goals. Mm-hmm. And they ask prime contractors to make sure a certain percentage of your team, and all of those entities have different percentages, make sure a percentage of your team has minority business enterprises on it. Sometimes it's 10% to 25%, let's say. Mm-hmm. When you're MBE and you're the prime contractor, which we've grown to become, we still have those same requirements on our team. So we still have to fulfill those seats on our team as well. But the whole purpose of the program is to allow minority firms to get their foot in the door, mm-hmm. To get opportunities, and then to grow your business and become a business like everybody else. And
established
firm. And it's a tough leap to go from that subcontractor and you're just sitting there supporting primes and then building the infrastructure to compete at that level. Mm-hmm. So, my dad, the first thing he taught me, even before I came into the firm, is there's a lot of guys who use this program to just get a piece of some of the money mm-hmm. and not do any of the work. And they're just, that's where there's some sort of, there's not a lot of real ones that were doing it back then. He said, I'm going to be the guy who does his work, and you can count on me, and I'm going to carry my load, and I'm going to earn my fee, and I'm going to figure out how to do this. And that's what's sustainable. And so we got a reputation for doing good work that they could put us on the team. And so then we were getting the calls to be on all the teams, and because they could count on us to do our portion of the work. Mm-hmm. And it wouldn't cost them to where they have to go to the owner and say, you have to pay me more to put them on the team because they're not going to do their work. Mm. So my dad's like, that's my business strategy, is to run a real business. And it worked out great for us, and we've continued to live by that.
Since you're looking at the future in the family business, what are some of your plans and things you're looking forward to?
Well, 2019 is a big year for us. We went through a complete rebrand. Mm-hmm. So we transitioned the business in 2017. I transitioned to the voting stock, mm-hmm. owning that. And I've been through a big restructure through 18. So I restructured us from a C corp into a holding corp and multiple LLCs with our business units. So we had everything under one holding structure, and we needed to diversify and spin it out, which is going to help us with growth, bringing investors, giving key employee stock. And with all of that, we've also rebranded and changed our logo with a new website that's going to be rolling out in February. And that's KAI-DB.com. Mm-hmm. Will be our all-new setup website explaining all of our vertical integration of services for a full turnkey construction company. And one of the cool things is our ability to do full design build for clients. And one of my best clients now is my dad. So he is doing another new development project out in Wildwood, mm-hmm. which is a senior living facility that it's going to be awesome. So looking forward to that as well.
So Dan Bean from CMA Consulting, you heard quite a story here today. What are some of your thoughts, your impressions?
You know, this is a very successful family business, and the fact that it started out as a minority business enterprise, and I think this business would have been successful whether that designation was there or not, and it is successful beyond that designation now. So that is a testament to a lot of good business decisions and a lot of persistence over years. The generational transition has taken place, and taken place in a timely and very effective way. I think the consideration that Mike Sr. offered to his other two sons was very appropriate. And these two have obviously a role model relationship for father-son, and it would be nice if every father-son, mother-daughter in a family business had the quality of relationship they do.
Yeah, Mike Jr., just one more time, if people want to reach out or find more information about the things that you do, where can they find you?
They can find us at www.kai-db.com. Our other sister company is theupcompanies.com.
Mike Sr. and Mike Jr., thank you so much for coming in today and sharing your family business story.
Thank you.